So, Dan, I saw Frozen 2 on the weekend, and it is wicked.
Don't, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. I haven't seen Frozen 1.
Don't, why have you not seen Frozen 1?
Because I am an adult. As
Frozen 1 is amazing, and I went to see it with my friend who is also an adult. So we were two adults, and we went to see Frozen 2 together in the absence of children. It was wicked. It was so good. Frozen 2, everyone has to watch it.
I saw Toy Story 4.
No, but wait. Everyone has to see Frozen 2, especially people who listen to this podcast, because I'm not going to give it away, but Frozen 2 is basically about cleaning up your mess. Cleaning up your people's mess. It is
your
just
people's
so
mess.
Yeah.
Wow. They're
it's
getting
epic.
Heavy-handed
it's
over
epic.
At Pixar.
It's epic. Is it Pixar or is it Disney, or are they the same? I don't even know.
I think Disney owns everybody now.
Yeah, maybe. But no, you know, sometimes you see, like, in some ways, I'm like, we're living in really bad times. And then in other ways, you go and you see this kids movie, which is about a massive, heavy, huge topic that's going on internationally right now. And you're like, shit, man, the world is in a good place.
And somehow they blend it with a snowman.
Oh, the snowman's sweet. But dude, it's
to
just
represent climate change, I think. I think the snowman represents climate change.
I don't know. I really don't want to give it away, but everyone has to see it.
Anyway, welcome to the Gender Nap. My name is Daniel.
I'm Naz.
Hi. What are we doing today?
Okay, so we are going to, apart from me fangirling over Frozen 2, which is so good, and I love that they're sisters. And they're
I thought by saying the name of the show, we were going to change course.
No,
and
but
you're still on Frozen.
I know, but they're like sisters. And the second half of the movie, me and my friend were just like crying nonstop. It's just revolutionary. Everyone has to see it. Because I'm going to start doing spoilers in a few weeks. So everyone, you've all got a few weeks to see it. Otherwise, I'm going to start doing spoilers. But anyway, this week, we're gonna hear from Esther Perel again. I spoke to her about a year and a half ago. And it was a really good conversation. It was a lot about what women can do to support men in finding their place in the world today. It's a conversation Dan and I talk about a lot. So yeah, we thought we would go back and revisit it because we're going to have a chat at the end of it.
Finally, we're talking about what women can do. Ugh.
What? Are you like...
That was my impression of guys that are like, I can't do
anything. Say anything. Can't say anything.
Okay, so I fucked up. Like, can we just talk about what women are doing wrong too?
Yeah,
no.
Well.
No, we cannot, Daryl.
So before we hear that, just a bit of housekeeping. Write to us. It's thegendernot@gmail.com. Also, send us voice memos and share the show with people. So share it with two or three people, especially if they disagree with us, because I like not preaching to the choir.
We're recording on Thanksgiving Day, USA, America.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. I don't think y'all celebrate it, so I will not say it in return. I don't want to insult anyone. But it came to me that we should be requesting, first of all, I'm sure you just realized a few people you could share the show with who disagree with you.
Yeah.
And B, I would love to hear, you know, any kind of experiences people had on Thanksgiving, maybe disagreeing with somebody, maybe making breakthroughs. I would love to hear breakthrough stories. Thanksgiving miracles.
Yeah, I'd also like to know if your crazy uncle convinced you of something. Because we're assuming that everyone's going to be like, yeah, I like convinced my bigoted uncle of X. Yeah. I'm wondering if the opposite happens.
Maybe he broke out his manifesto and opened your eyes to some shit, man.
Yeah.
Or maybe you walked in and your dad was reading Liz Plank's new book and you were like, wow, this is cool. You beat me to it.
Yeah.
Who knows what'll happen? But I want to hear all about it.
Or he was reading Esther Perel.
Yeah, because
he's having an affair or thinking about having an affair.
And how do I... What if your dad is so smart that he's reading Esther Perel in preparation for an affair?
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, Dan and I are going to be back in a minute. So this is a conversation with Esther Perel from about a year and a half ago. We will chat to you right after.
it was already 3-4 years ago, and people would say, what will be, you know, once you finish the infidelity project, do you have any? And I said, I want to work on the subject of men. I mean, this was way before the whole wave and movement that we are experiencing now. And people would say, but why? And I said, because I think that if the 20th century is the century where the women made changes, I think the 21st century will be the one where the men adapt to the changes that the women have made. And the lives of women will not change until the men come along. And they too need 50 years, like women have had, to rethink their role and their place and their identity at home and at work and in the society at large. And from that place, I became interested in the subject of modern masculinity. And over the years already, have often been one of the only women to enter into men's groups, men's workshops, where I witnessed kind of what happens when men can drop into a whole different level of interaction with each other, exposure to themselves, disclosure of themselves, when they can step outside of the male code, if you want. And I always found it enormously humbling. I felt so honored, because when women come to me in therapy and they share their pain, it is very moving, but I also know that they probably have already shared it with somebody else. Whereas when men come to me in therapy, for years now, I've been 35 years a therapist, this is not a new thought. I often know that they are talking to somebody for the first time, let alone that they're hearing themselves for the first time too.
Well, they might not even know what the issue is, right?
No, they often need a lot more prompting until they can articulate it. It's the creation of a vocabulary on the spot. You know, when men are in pain, they do it alone. And since they're meant to be needless and play through pain and be stoic and disconnected and autonomous and fearless and all of those things, it doesn't bode that well for how they address their relational life, which is what I focus on. But relational life is overall health. I mean, ultimately, it's the quality of your relationships that determines the quality of your life. And yesterday, one of the things that came up in the talk was a concept that David Brooks, the journalist, had come up with, which I thought applied so well for men, is the difference between the eulogy and the CV. The resume, you know, of your performances is not the same as the eulogy, not of what you did, but of who you were.
Because I guess with men, it's very much achievement orientated, right? You kind of
yes,
show your
men
worth.
Are inculcated. Look, man up is not something you translate in the feminine. Neither is the word emasculated. Neither is the word loser. I mean, you prove your masculinity over and over again, and you prove it to other men. You know, it is a fragile identity that needs constant reinforcement, because if it was strong in its own, then you wouldn't have to prove it all the time. It would just be there. But it needs to constantly be reaffirmed and tested and proven. You know, there are not many cultures, if any, where you have to take the girls to the woods to help them transition from girl. Biology takes care of it, right, in a way. So that concept of this masculinity that constantly has to prove itself means that it has performance and achievement on one side, but it also has terrible threat of shame on the other. If you don't, all you have is shame.
Can women play a role in helping men find out who
absolutely,
they want to be?
Absolutely.
Or should women play a role?
Yes,
even?
yes. I did another event this week that was based on a whole program on inequality and on gender gap and wage gap in particular in Silicon Valley and in Hollywood. And I thought the event was fantastic, but it was hundreds of women without men. And I thought, what a missed opportunity. It's not okay. It's just like, you know, I'm not sure men would voluntarily watch this program to begin with.
What was it called?
It's the Katie Couric series, America Inside Out. It's okay. really good. But I know that if every woman there had brought in a male friend, a brother, a boyfriend, a husband, whoever, you know, it would have... Gender cannot just be a woman's concern. Mm-hmm. It's a human concern, and it affects all. I mean, patriarchy doesn't just hurt women. It hurts everybody. You know, that, to me, is very, very critical. And I think that, you know... If we want to help women have a voice and have a sense of power and agency and efficacy, and if we want to have men be able to be still powerful but also have an open heart and be connected to their emotions in a way that actually makes them more whole, then we create a true egalitarian system. And I think that's what I am working towards. The gay movement didn't just have gay people on the streets. It had everybody. The civil rights movement. I mean, once you understand that the well-being of others actually influences your own, that things are interdependent, the notion sometimes that you have these days that, you know, it's time for men to just shut up and listen. Yes, they do have a lot to listen to, absolutely. But so do women. And that means listening to men who speak differently and encouraging them to speak differently. Those men are our sons as well. They're not just some anonymous creatures. I have two boys, so we raise them. They don't just come out of nowhere. I do think that everybody needs to be part of the improvement of the other. I would say that this is true. It's a kind of a social welfare way of thinking about the world, and it is my conception.
So on this podcast, we're really keen to have men listening. And luckily, about half our audience is men, which is cool. But sometimes I wonder about how do we let men know that it's in their interest to tackle these issues? Because, you know, sometimes when you're the party who's discriminated against, it's kind of easier for you to explore your identity because the problem is so obvious to you. Whereas with a lot of men, I feel like the problems aren't even that obvious until it's women pointing them out to mm-hmm. them. So kind of how do we encourage men to take ownership right. of exploring their masculinity?
So I have a few ways I would answer this thing. The same is happening for my podcast, Where mm-hmm. Should We Begin? It's a live couples therapy program. 45% of listeners are men. Mm-hmm. Listening to couples therapy, for God's sake. You know, I know that the TED Talks, I know that my books... are heavily listened to by men. There's something that is male-friendly in the way that I speak about things that I've known for the last 12, 15 years now. And to the point where there was a guy yesterday at the Wall Street Journal, literally flew in from the Philippines.
Oh, nice.
I mean, it was like, I said, for 45 minutes? He said, yes. And I just thought, you know, that'll move you. But... when people began to divorce, I grew up with only 3 children of divorce in my entire grade. They were different. Nobody talked about it. They didn't want to expose it. Sometimes people said you shouldn't go to play at their house because those are different families. You know, there's always a different family that could contaminate you with something if you stay. You know what I'm talking about. And I just thought it takes numbers. It takes numbers. Then I worked for 20 years with mixed couples, intercultural, interracial, interreligious families. Everybody said they can't succeed. They can't succeed. No, if you're the only one and you have to bear all the pressure of being the one, then it is much harder. But that doesn't mean that you didn't succeed because you were mixed. Maybe you didn't succeed because you were not supported. Mm-hmm. You know, let's not mix cause and effect. Same thing here. At the beginning, the men who listen are different. They're alone. And they need to know that they're not the only ones listening. So you try as best you can to connect them with each other in various ways that you do. I do it with live events. I do it with live webinars. I make it very clear you're not the only guy here in the village. You know, there's hundreds of you listening. And then it starts to feel less like, you know, I'm hiding this thing, you know. And then it becomes men who are able to go. And sometimes it requires being in groups of men that are unique today. And there are more and more of those. But sometimes it also, you know, are you a man who's actually ever heard one of your female friends describe an unpleasant experience that she's had? And I'm being nice when I say unpleasant, you know. No woman has ever come to tell me. That's one thing you hear these days a lot. You know, none of my female friends. I said, you know what? you're going to go ask. Find out. They haven't told you because ultimately they may still see you as a guy, you know. And who knows why. It's a bias. It doesn't mean you wouldn't. Go and ask. Then I make them go on an assignment. Be a journalist, you know. Ask five of your women friends or colleagues, you know, if they've ever had experiences at work, for example, you know. And just listen and just thank them for telling you. And then the next time you hear guys talk, you actually have something to answer. And you can say, you know, guys, let me tell you what also happens in our offices here. And it's this kind of step by step. My image for social change is, and for therapy in general, is like playing pool. It's billiard. If you want to kick a ball, to go in the hole, it's never that ball that you need to kick. Which is the ball that you need to kick in order for the other one to actually go down? Mm-hmm. It's that strategic kind of thinking. So I think women are enormously important in the changing lives of men, the same way that men are important in the changing life of women. I mean, we are really interdependent. We need each other in so many spaces of life. I think that when, you know, it's very easy for women to talk about the misogyny of men. It's not so honest sometimes on the part of women to talk about their entire prejudices and what they consider masculine and how they actually play into the patriarchal model themselves. I mean, we either do it honestly and we all look at our double standards. And not only men have double standards, so do women. I was talking with one of the founders of one of the big apps, one of the three big ones. And, you know, I said, what kind of information? And the whole thing about height came up.
About height being more attractive?
Yes, women. Of course. If you don't, you know, for every inch that you are shorter, you need to earn $40,000 more.
Wow.
You know, I said, how would women feel if they asked for weight?
Mm.
We would never stand for it. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody has a double standard of things that, you know, they think is more attractive. And the men are very much a part of that thing. I think it's much, women say all the time, I want to see these vulnerable men. Fair enough. I have worked with so many women, wives, mothers, who are terrified by the vulnerability of their men or sons. You know, because a vulnerable guy, my God, if he starts to tear, maybe he would collapse and he would never get up. You know, and then if he becomes so tender, then who's going to be my backup? Mm-hmm. You know, who am I going to lean against? I need a rock. I don't need a puddle.
So just on that point, something that comes up a lot and that we discuss on the podcast a lot is about emotional labor, that as women, we're kind of helping men with their emotional lives a lot. So you've made this great example of when men are vulnerable, sometimes women are freaked out by it. Mm-hmm. And I think there can be a problem whereby men don't take enough ownership for like how much work they also have to put into it, that it's like a two-way process, that like women can help you with your emotional life, but you also have to sort of take a step forward as well. And it's something I hear on your podcast a lot, when often, you know, a husband will have some problem and his wife will be so empathetic and supportive, and you almost feel like not only is she dealing with the problem in their relationship, but she's taking on so much of the emotional development that he has to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be a frustration where, as a woman, I mean, speaking for myself and a lot of women I know, yeah, we want to help men, but how do we do it in a way whereby they also take ownership so we're not doing the work for them?
Right. But I think that it's a little more layered than that. Mm-hmm. I think that when a woman starts to talk for her guy, a part of it is because she thinks that she has to. And a part of it is because she doesn't think he would do it as well as her. And a part of it is because he is used to letting her do it because he also has internalized that it wouldn't be up to her standard. And a part of it is because he thinks she just does it faster. And a part of it has let her be the representative of that dimension of life. And so it's a lot of internalized biases, if you want.
So should women step back and be like, no, you know,
yes,
is it encouragement for the men
yes.
to come forward?
You know, it's like sometimes I hear the guys come into my office and say, I'm not a talker. And then they sit down and
they
talk 20 minutes straight. 20 minutes straight. And they still tell me I'm not a talker. After that. And I look at them and say, no, absolutely not. You know, we shall let the behavior and the identity have nothing to do with each other. You know, then I say to her, you know, which part of him do you believe? The part of him that is a talker and knows to express himself so elegantly and eloquently, or the part of him that still wants to hold on to the masculine code that, you know, he is not one? Which one do you live with? And which one do you relate to? See, I think there is always the overt and the covert. Mm-hmm. And there is a part of women that we just have to say, you know, you want more from him, right? Sit back and watch. Enjoy the show, as they say, you know, enjoy the flight and let him do the work. But women have a mixed relationship. They want him to do it. They don't believe he can do it. They're angry at having to do it. They're afraid of what will happen if he does it. It's a combination of things. It's not one thing only. And it is not an individual plot. This is socialization. This is historical. This is legacies of mothers and grandmothers having talked to their daughters. You know, it's multiple layers. And they resent having to do it, but they don't believe that he could do it, or that he really wants to do it, or that he's doing it for the right reasons, or that he's doing it because it matters to her and she wants it to matter to him. There's a lot of things going on in the emotional layering between the genders.
So this is an interesting example because I've had this happen in the past few months because of Me Too and all these conversations that are happening. So I've had this happen with male friends where I've been trying not to do what you say, like speak for them too much and stuff, and kind of try to let them deal with it on their own. And in some ways, I feel a little bit guilty doing that because still men are finding it hard to have those conversations with each other. So kind of how do you make that balance as a woman of being supportive for the men, but like you say, not sort of invading the territory or kind of speaking on their behalf or, you know, taking over?
You know, I've led a number of conversations in the last few months inspired by the changes of the moment. And I call them sex, power, and gender. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily only focus on Me Too. I really focus on a kind of reckoning that is happening with one of the oldest power exchange systems. And one of the oldest power exchange systems is that forever, men traded social power for sex, which they otherwise would not have access to. And women traded beauty and youth for social power, which would otherwise be denied to them. This is the old trade show. That trade show is now being challenged. For that, we need to be able to bring men into the perspective not of their power, but in fact of their insecurities. Not of their grandiosity, but of their shame, which is the hidden side. And that's very threatening to everybody because that challenges a social order of how things have been set up for a long time that you don't undo on the spot. Mm-hmm. I do fishbowls in those conversations. They can be 80 people or 1,000 people. And in the fishbowl, the men talk for a while alone, only to themselves, while the women listen. And then the women talk to themselves while the men listen. It is beyond powerful. But what's very interesting is the relationships of the women's listening to the men talking like this. They've never talked about it like that to each other, to themselves. The stuff that comes out is just the men. It's mind-blowing, you know. The women too. The women too. The men have never heard the women talk like this. Everybody has protected the other group in some warped way. I use the word protection, you know, as in you can't understand. If I, you know, that is a fundamental contempt. You won't get it. So what's the point of telling you?
But sometimes there can be a fairness to that. Like someone has tried to tell the other party and they've been shut down.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I mean, the people come to this. There's a reason that it became this way. I'm not at all, I'm establishing it. I'm not even justifying it or criticizing. I'm establishing this. This is the data of the moment. From there, we start to do the work. That's where each group starts. And you take them where they are at. So on the part of men, it's the ability to listen to the pain of the women without, A, feeling instant flooding of shame, or that they need to fix it, that they have to do something, getting defensive, minimizing it, qualifying it, semi-blaming her, all of those maneuvers that are so common because it's so difficult to listen. Because it's so difficult to listen without feeling instantly individually accused. You know, I'm not one of those. What are you putting that on me? The whole thing. And women, when they listen to the men talk from that other place, I think the two things that are really important is not to first say that's not enough. I expect more openness, more vulnerability, more. Like it's not enough. Like it right away is not good enough, you know. And one of the women began with that response in one of the groups. It's like she said, I said, what did you hear? And she gets up and she says, what I didn't hear. And I said, let me stop you right there. Because here's what's going to happen. If you do this, A, you're going to make it feel possible. What's the point of talking? It doesn't matter what I say. You're always going to tell me what's off.
It's not good enough.
Why don't you just tell me what you want me to say? Put the words in my mouth and I'll just repeat them. Maybe then you'll be happy. That's the voice of contempt, right? And three is I'm going to withdraw and be silent again because this was so hard and I don't think you have a clue of how hard it was. So what you're looking at is all the systems, the conspiracies where each group induces silence in the other. Everybody has an interest sometimes in keeping things under wrap. Then it festers, then it explodes, you know, it has to erupt somehow. And that's the part that I work on is in how do you take away the silence, create something that is not shrouded in secrecy and in shame, provide a different quality of listening, respectfully, with dignity, with integrity, that isn't Pollyannish, that doesn't, you know, pretend, oh, we're going to be in a beautiful world right now. We're not. Never were. But that says things will change.
If you had to give advice to women for the one thing they could do to help men as they redefine their masculinity, what would that be?
To mothers, I would say, watch out when you stop touching your sons as much as you touch your daughters. Watch out, fathers, when you tell your boys, don't cry. Because at age 3, boys and girls do exactly the same. Watch out when you talk about boys manning up or, you know, proving their masculinity and it means stripping them from their emotionality and their connections to others. To teachers, let boys and girls have friendships from the earliest ages. It is one of the most powerful systems for learning about the other, for normalizing the other, from looking what goes on in the backstage of the other on the other side. Let boys and girls grow up together, but in friendships. It's not just that they share the classroom, in friendships. To women, if you need to help your partner in some of the development of the emotional language, don't think of it as I shouldn't have to do this. Do it yourself. It's in your best interest. It's in your best interest. Like all partners who say to the other, you do it. You know, think about what you want. And if it involves your being part of it, why would you not? You know, just in the name of a principle.
Because then you end up doing it all. I think that's the worry a lot of women have. They end up having to do most of the work.
But you do that. You will do
you have
much.
To do it anyway.
You will do most in any case. So at least do it in a way that is more self-serving. Mm. It's not sacrificial, you know. It's I think that notion, you know, women sometimes do all the work, and in the West, women sometimes still think that they do some work better. You know, I think that if you're going to talk about equality at work, you need to talk about equality at home. And that does require us accepting that we are not the standard and that we don't own parenthood.
So, you know what I love? Okay, so Naz and I, we have a lot of very spirited conversations off microphone. You know, we get very philosophically deep. We talk a lot about today's thought leaders.
Philosophically deep.
Yeah. I almost made a bad joke. Anyway. Anyway, so we talk a lot about, you know, the Esther Perels of the world, and you always say things like, I'm such a big fan of hers. She's brilliant. She's you say wicked. You say other fun UK terms for good. I don't know them all, but And then every time I hear her talk or read something of hers, I'm like, you, Naz, you can't possibly agree with that. You can't. She opened with, it took women 50 years to figure this stuff out. Maybe men need 50 years. And that is not your attitude. Your attitude is men need to get their heads out of their F and A's ASAP, like yesterday would be preferable. it just seems funny that you're such a big fan.
Oh, dude, that makes me sound really heartless.
Well, heartless can be good. I think you have the ability to have a heart and also have boundaries, and that's really important.
Oh, thank you. No, actually, it's funny because I find, I don't know, I think people like Esther Perel and also Brené Brown falls in this category. There's a bunch of people where I think they say really good things, and I agree with what they say in the context of a therapist. Because I think even when I was listening back to that, I was like, everything Esther says makes sense as a therapist, because otherwise it's women having to be therapists for the men in their lives, which is what women do anyway, and they need to stop doing. So that's where it gets tricky with some of these people, because I think in the context of their profession, what they say is right. And I know I put that to Esther, and she said something about women have to do
the
emotional.
She dodged it.
Well, I said something about women have to do the emotional labor. And, you know, she was very smart where she was like, you're going to have to do that anyway. So you might as well be strategic about it or do it in a way that benefits you. That is what makes me feel mixed, though, because I feel like, okay, this is what I think. Okay, I feel like we're in this period where women are super angry and they're being really open, and I actually don't think it's a bad thing if men are getting really angry too. I think long term, it's really important for everyone to get their rage out as long as they're doing it in a safe way. So I don't mean like if guys are going to get angry and they're going to go shooting people, or they're going to be abusive to the women in their lives, or they're going to vote for Boris Johnson or Trump or like that crazy dude in Brazil or whatever. I'm like, as long as men aren't doing that, I think it's important that everyone gets their rage out and works through it long term.
I feel like you maybe have never encountered a rageful man, because
that's exactly what they do when they're angry.
No other options for male rage. You either cut up a woman and put her in your trunk.
Oh, dude,
or
please don't say that.
You vote for well, like, so those are your options, you know, and so I don't know. Is rage the answer?
No. It's more the fact that, like, okay, what is rage or anger? Often it's because you're hurt, because you feel unlistened to, you feel like your needs haven't been heard. And, you know, I think there's a lot of legit reasons why men might be feeling that way. And it's really important that you explore that and you get it out. So I think as long as men are doing that in a safe way, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Maybe it's just because, like, I'm generally of the belief in my own life that you can't avoid the negative stuff, like you have to work through it. So in a way, I think if women are really angry and they're being very honest, and men are getting angry and honest, and we've got 5 or 6 years of everyone working through their stuff, that's a pretty good thing long run. Do you know what I mean? I don't think we should immediately all be sort of like holding hands and agreeing. That's just not realistic, and it's not like a long run solution.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, if everybody's all angry and burning stuff,
but they don't have to be burning stuff. It's like being angry can be you are going to see a therapist, or you're going to get together with your male buddies and like work through why you're feeling angry, or
right,
you're going to do some inner work, basically, you know?
Sure. You know, what I, maybe not burning the city down, but burning some calories, you know? But if we're all focused on that and we're not fixing climate change, by the time we all come around, we're not going to have anywhere to be nice to each other.
It's not an either or. But I do sometimes think about this as well. Just
like, what if we figure it out like right on the last day? And we're like, oh, we got it. We can all be, oh, never mind. We're all underwater. Anyway, what was I going to say? Damn it.
No, but,
I had a thought, and then I got distracted by my own stupidity.
But wait, but surely you agree with this as someone who has done a lot of hard work, that sometimes you just got to delve in and do the hard work, and long run, that's what you need to do?
I do agree with that. the thing I was thinking is like, and Esther said something along these lines, and I think it is worth addressing, is like, oftentimes when men start to figure out feelings, I it seems to me that we're kind of given this like, yawn city, grow up, like, duh, that's what feelings are, quit being a little punk about it. You know what I mean? Like, we're like, whoa, I'm having feelings and this is crazy. And then women go to us, yeah, duh, those are feelings. Quit being stupid. Move on with your life. When I think, and I'm not saying that we need to be like celebrated for having a like an emotional awakening, but I do think that like some encouraging words might be nice rather than like, duh, times a million, that's called feeling sad.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you're wrong, but I just feel as women, we spend so much of our time like encouraging men that everyone's fed up right now.
No, totally. And I, you know, far be it for me to be like, women need to spend more time encouraging men, because nobody wants to hear me say that. But at the same time, if y'all did, it might benefit y'all. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like this is one of those things where it's like, theoretically, I don't think you're wrong. But
Now, I don't... Nobody ever wants to like think of like women as having to raise men as their children. But let's think about real children, right? Like, you have these children and they're messy little shits and they piss on everything and they eat everything and you gotta keep them out of fire and stuff, you know? Really, like, you gotta take care of them. And if
that.
You do,
I know where this is going. You're the one who said all that.
No. I don't know. What did I say? Anyway, eventually, if you do a good job, eventually, you know, they'll be healthy adults and you can retire and they'll take care of you. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, I see where this is going, but this is the problem, because I think part of the problem is that women, especially mothers and women and families, have spent millennia like covering for men and covering for what men can't do. That's how patriarchy works.
But I'm not saying covering for them. I'm saying teaching them, not raising them, but like educating them, helping them. And then eventually you have somebody who can A, take care of themselves, but B, also help take care of you.
Yeah, but I think that works as long as the guys in question know that the women are doing that and are appreciative of that. So they're like, sure. I'm going to ask you if you can guide me on this thing. A guy once asked me this, actually. Someone I know, he asked me for some advice about... I thought he handled this really well. He asked me for some advice about seeing a therapist, and he started it with, like, I want to know if I can ask you some advice. I know that this is... extra work for you, and he runs a business, and he said to me, I am happy to give you some business advice in exchange, which I thought was freaking cool. And I did ask him to help me with a contract, but it was kind of cool. It was more just the acknowledgement of like, I acknowledge that this is work for you, I would appreciate it, but I'm respecting it's work for you, and look, I'm happy to help you out in something that I have expertise in as well. I thought that was stellar, and it's not me being transactional, by the way. I thought that was so smart, and I was like, not smart in a sort of strategic way, but it was just someone saying, I acknowledge that this is work for you, and look, this is stuff I'm skilled in, and I'm happy to help you out too.
Well, like, I think the phrase transactional can be a positive sometimes, right? Because like, what he did there, I mean, yes, it made it sort of a transaction, but like, it also added value to what you were bringing, right? Like it didn't add value.
Dude,
but
this is some business speak we've got.
It didn't add value, but what's the word I'm thinking of? Like it accepted that value was there. You know what
I
mean?
Yes, exactly.
Like it didn't. I can't. Why can't I think of the word? I don't know. But
he acknowledged that
he
this
credited
is something I'm doing.
That
exactly.
There was value. Yeah.
Exactly.
And which I think
I
is really important.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Like I feel like if men figured out the secret to life is just like, be gracious. Everyone will give you what you want as long as you just go, wow, I really appreciate this.
No,
that's
but I
so
think,
kind of you.
But I think what you were saying, I get your point. I think as long as guys are like, look, like woman X could you please guide me on this thing? And guidance can also, you know, also like there is so much literature written about things. I think women and also people of color get very annoyed at their sort of like straight friends or their white friends or their male friends coming up to them being like, can you teach me about this topic where there's been like 7,000 books written? Do you know what I mean? Even being like, can you suggest some books that you think would be helpful for me? So that they're not having to do all of the work to educate. I just think just an acknowledgement that, hey, I understand this is work for you. I'm willing to do the work. I'd love your guidance. Just that acknowledgement. Otherwise, we get into the spiral of women trying to therapy men, which turns into women covering up for men eventually. That's what happens. So,
acknowledging was the word I was looking for. Thank
exactly.
you. You got it. Yeah, and well, and I think, you know, if I were to come to you and I were to say, hey, could you, I'm trying to figure out some stuff about gals, you know, and people of color, you're those things, and could you recommend some literature or maybe some TED Talks I could watch? I feel like you would do that, and then what would happen is, as I started to develop, you know, a base understanding of some things, maybe some vocabulary I could be using, you and I could start having better conversations, and you would actually be more more excited to help. You know, you would be more, you would want to be more involved, and it would feel like less work because I was doing some on the other side, right? Like, I feel like that is a great starting point you brought up. So homework for everybody, go to somebody who's not like you, you know what I mean? Just looks different maybe, and say, hey, I want to learn more about what you got going on. Not from you directly, not yet, but could you recommend a TED Talk?
I'm going to give you some homework, Dan. Are you going to listen to my documentary about emotional labor? That's why I've been smiling all the way through that.
You keep bringing this up, you keep bringing it up, I'm never going to do it. Never going to do it. This is what happens when you put a raccoon in a corner.
Every week we get emails
about... You're shaming me. Do you understand this?
Dude, you're doing the proper like dude reaction, right?
Yeah, well, this is what Esther just talked about. You're shaming me. If you want me to do it, there are better ways to get me to do it than to publicly shame me. Because that's going to bring out the rage.
And then are you going to vote for Trump then next year?
Yeah,
maybe. It's going to happen because of this conversation.
Yeah, this is what turns me into a MAGA.
So we just listened to Esther Perel. I am Naz.
I'm Dan. I'm so glad you guys are here. Jonathan Blackwell, Sam Baker, co-producers. Come back next time. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, etc.
Go see Frozen 2.
Great end.